Rewatch Podcast presents The Naked Gun Rewatch. Join us for some bonus episodes as we revisit these films in a smaller film franchise. Send your feedback to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or follow us on Twitter at rewatchpod. Today we're discussing The Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad, starring Leslie Nielsen, Priscilla Presley, Ricardo Montalban, welcome back, George Kennedy, O.J. Simpson, and Weird Al Yankovic, directed by David Zucker. Welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast. I'm Corey, and it's the same old story. Boy finds girl, boy loses girl, girl finds boy, boy forgets girl, boy remembers girl, girl dies in a tragic blimp accident over the Orange Bowl on New Year's Day.
And this is Nathan, and I promise you, whatever scum did this, not one man on the force will rest 1 minute until he's behind bars. Now let's grab a bite to eat.
Oh my God.
Oh, this movie.
Yeah, I'm kind of looking forward to chatting about this one. And that line is gold. I like both of those lines in particular. They really do make me laugh.
I have to say, Nathan, it's been a long couple of weeks for me.
Yes.
A few life things going on.
Yeah, I know.
I think you're right there with me. Just life stuff really getting us down. And watching this movie, bringing a smile to your face, having a good laugh, I feel better already.
Yes, definitely. And you know what, man? There's two more films to go.
Yes.
So before we get too far, should we just go straight to the trailer?
Let's do it.
In this city, there's crime on every street. But one man has seen enough. He's Lieutenant Frank Drebin.
Whatever scum did this, not one man on this force will rest for 1 minute until he's behind bars. Now let's grab a bite to eat.
He's a good cop who's having a bad day. His best friend...
Oh, everyone should have a friend like you.
...is in a coma.
As soon as Nordberg is better, he's welcome back at Police Squad.
But I wouldn't wait until the last minute to fill out those organ donor cards.
His girlfriend asked him to look her up.
Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Let me help you with that.
And his city is in the hands of a master criminal with a sinister plan.
I must kill the queen.
How can any police story contain this much action? This much romance?
I like cops.
All right.
Or this much baseball? Starring Leslie Nielsen, a cop who's always on the alert. Mikhail Gorbachev.
I knew it.
Queen Elizabeth, everyone's favorite queen. Priscilla Presley. A woman who really cooks.
How hot and wet do you like it?
Ricardo Montalban.
Frank.
You're both right.
George Kennedy, the partner with an appetite for danger. O.J. Simpson, as you've never seen him before. And Reggie Jackson in his first dramatic role. In a movie so big, it had to be filmed in color. The Naked Gun, from the files of Police Squad.
Coming this Christmas to a theater near you. See you then.
All right, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that. I know we did.
Yes, let's get into the trivia.
Yeah, I'll let you start, mate.
All right. The Naked Gun from the files of Police Squad grossed $78.8 million in the box office. It was released December 2nd, 1998. 1988. And in its opening weekend, it finished in the first place, grossing $9.3 million. Mm. And then it kind of dropped off a little bit for its second week. Came in second at $6.1 million to the new number one, which was Twins.
I know. What are your kind of memories of this film coming out? Because from my perspective, I mean, this came out in 1988. And to kind of put it into, and I'm not too sure if I've ever kind of divulged this on the podcast before, but as I was growing up, my parents actually owned a cinema. And I remember when this film kind of showed up at the movies, and it was a big hit. It was a big, I remember this film being a very impactful, very funny hit. I mean, $78 million. I mean, that's a sizable profit there. And they made a lot of money from this. And I mean, they obviously made enough money to make two more movies. So yeah, it was big. What about you, man? What was your history with it?
Well, this one is one of those movies that was in heavy rotation from the video store. You know, growing up throughout the 90s, the video store always had, when a movie got old enough, they'd put it in, you could rent it for a week, and they do like a big like 10 movies for $10 deal.
Yep.
You can get 10 movies for a week for $10, and this one was always in the pile whenever I go to the video store. I love this movie, and I love this style of comedy, you know, just this real like visual gag stuff. It cracks me up so much.
But it's not just visual gag, it's total deadpan. Like Leslie, like, I mean, we'll obviously get more into it as the film discussion goes on, but Leslie Nielsen's delivery is so stone cold. Like, you totally buy it, but he's so funny. He's hilarious in this film. He's great.
Yeah, absolutely. And of course, this is directed by David Zucker, who had made Airplane before this. Another one with Leslie Nielsen, where he does pretty much the exact same kind of comedy.
Don't you mean Flying High?
So, well, I always knew it as Aeroplane.
I'm joking. I know it is no kind of known as Aeroplane overseas, but for me, man, it's always just Flying High.
Nice. I didn't know that.
That's one of the funniest films of all time, Flying High. It's great. Like, you know, to this day, whenever I use the word Shirley, I always kind of think, don't call me Shirley.
It's either that or Striker. Yeah. Striker.
Oh my god. Anyway, I mean, we could talk about Flying High for some time, couldn't we? Anyway.
Yeah. And well, the other thing too that I have to mention is that this is actually based on a short-lived TV series which was called simply Police Squad, which was a spoof on old cop dramas, right? And this only ran for 6 episodes in 1982. You can get them for free. I've put a link up on our Facebook page for it. You can just go and watch them. They are just like The Naked Gun. Maybe just a little less polished, but the humor is still there. And, you know, the gags are just gag-a-minute stuff. It's great.
Okay, all right. Because I always kind of wondered about the Police Squad TV show. I wasn't too sure, like, the quality of it, if you know what I mean. Like, I mean, I don't, if it's got the same pedigree involved, I have no doubt that it's good and very funny. Like, I should definitely watch it.
Yeah, and I'd never seen it. I actually watched it, you know, just in research for this podcast. So I went and watched, and a bit of a tie-in for the rewatch podcast too, because episode 3 actually has Kay Callan in it, who is a regular on Lois and Clark.
Nice. There you go, eh?
It's Clark's mother.
But I mean, David Zucker, he kind of pioneered, I mean, maybe not pioneered, that's probably too big a word, but he certainly had his own kind of idiosyncratic style with making these movies. I mean, he obviously made Aeroplane, then he obviously did Naked Gun, he did obviously 3 Naked Gun films. He went on to direct also the South Park guys, Basketball.
Yeah, Trey Parker and Matt Stone.
Yeah, and he obviously, he'd made a lot of these scary movie films as well, the Scary Movie 3, 4 and 5. And, like, don't get me wrong, man, I realise the quality of those films is kind of up and down, but there's some laughs in there for sure.
Yeah, again, it's the kind of movie I can just put on, switch your brain off and just laugh at the deadpan delivery of these gags. It's hilarious.
Totally. Apparently Queen Elizabeth, like, there's a big gag in the first film where one of the premises is Queen Elizabeth is coming to town to attend a baseball game. Well, it actually happened where some years later Queen Elizabeth actually attended an Oakland A's versus Baltimore Orioles game in Baltimore and met both teams in their respective dugouts. Reggie Jackson, who was then an Oakland A's coach, was the first person in the receiving line in the Oakland dugout, and some news channels actually showed gag footage from the movie of the Queen impersonator throwing out the first pitch. And Leslie Nielsen actually met the real Queen Elizabeth II in 2005 as well.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, it is actually a funny throw that she does spiral baseball throw. You're like, what?
She kind of catches everyone by surprise, doesn't she?
And according to David Zucker in the DVD commentary, the studio insisted on the casting of an Oscar winner in a major role in this film. And that's what led to the casting of George Kennedy. He plays Ed. And he had been actively campaigning for the role of Ed for months, saying that he was furious at having missed his chance to spoof himself in the movie Airplane.
Yeah, he's very good in this.
Yeah.
As you said before, this is a big screen version of the Police Squad TV show from 1982. There's actually a gag in the film as well where apparently Leslie Nielsen opens up his refrigerator late in the movie, and there's some, I don't know what it is, like custard or yogurt or milk, or I think it's milk or something like that. And he looks and he looks at the expiry date and it says, you know, whatever date it is, 1982. And I think that was the cancellation date of Police Squad or something like that. So a bit of a internal gag there.
Yeah, yeah. And the other thing too, being the fact that the show was called Police Squad, and this is an adaptation from that show, they actually changed it so it wouldn't be confused with Police Academy, which was really big at the time.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually. I never really thought of that. But, I mean, as we've discussed several times, I mean, it's 1988. I mean, Police Academy debuted in 84, I think it was. And they made a film a year, so they were up to the fourth or fifth film by this stage.
Yeah, so a good little tie-in there. Another tie-in to I know. Films that we've discussed here.
I know.
The fact that this movie is, of course, like I said, based on a TV show that was cancelled. The fact that Ricardo Montalban is in this movie. He also reprised his role of Karnoonian Singh in Star Trek II, a role which he had previously played in a TV show that was cancelled.
Yeah, and he picked up this role because of how good he was in Star Trek. So, and he was fantastic. Both Leslie Nielsen and George Kennedy were involved in disaster movies about aeroplanes. Kennedy as the airplane pirate in the Airport movie series, and Nielsen as Dr. Rymack in the 1980 film Aeroplane, which was a parody, which we spoke about before, and he's very, very funny about in that film. It's great.
Yeah. Leslie Nielsen gets a lot of the praise for this, but George Kennedy, like the things he does, just the subtle things on the side are just too funny.
Yeah, I know.
But the other thing too is that Leslie Nielsen and George Kennedy had both starred in slasher horror movies prior to doing this. Of course, Leslie Nielsen was in the Jamie Lee Curtis film Prom Night.
Oh, okay.
Which is a bit of a cult hit now.
Is it a serious role?
It is.
Yeah. Okay, so it's not him doing gags.
It's a proper horror film.
Have you seen it?
I have.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
It's one of those things where I watched it and I was like, is that Leslie Nielsen? He's not being funny.
I don't think there's a horror film that you haven't watched.
That's true.
You're right into it. It's great.
Yeah. But then, you know, Kennedy was also in the 1982 film Wacko, which was a spoof version of the movie Prom Night.
There you go.
So, you know, another little crazy tie in there. The two of them had also appeared in disaster movies as pilots or captains as well. Nielsen was a ship's captain in the Poseidon Adventure.
I remember
Kennedy
him. And he's good in that
pilot
too.
In Aeroplane, yeah.
I just kind of giggle when I see him, though. He's so hard to take seriously because he's so, from my generation's perspective, and it might be different for older generations, but from our point of view, man, he's so tied up in this kind of spoof comedy genre, and he owns it. Like, he's really great in these roles.
When you see him in serious roles, like in Prom Night, in the 60s, he did a lot of cheap sci-fis, like I think it was The Creature from Another Planet or something like that,
yep.
Where he plays like this crazy adventurer guy. So yeah, it's kind of weird to see him in those serious roles just because he is the icon of the Naked Gun films.
Couple of cameos in the film. The producer actually appears in it, Robert K. Weiss. The film's producer is the hot dog vendor in the montage sequence, and also the director David Zucker shows up in the opening credits as a man fixing a picture up onto a wall of his house when the police squad car drives into the hallway. the director turns around and jumps into the room next door.
Nice.
Nice.
All right, shall we get into our main discussion of this?
Let's do it.
Yeah, well, like we were saying, the film's opening montage is just like, you're like, what? How did you come up with this? This camera angle of the top of a police car with the siren going, and then this car just drives into like the craziest places, including people's houses and stuff.
Yeah, I know. It's hilarious, kind of the way it kind of pans out, because it goes for quite a while, and it would have taken them a fair amount of time to actually film the sequence and actually get it all right, but it's obviously kind of paying homage to the original kind of TV show a little bit as well, I kind of feel. A bit. It's kind of setting the scene for what type of film we're about to watch, but it kind of lets the gags run pretty loose for quite some time.
Yeah, and they play, I think this is amalgamation of two different gags that were in the TV show, because the TV show started with the view of, you know, the police car with the siren, but it didn't do anything. It just came up like police squad in color, you know, it was like really like cheap like that. But they also did this other gag where in at least once in every episode, Drebin and Ed would be in an elevator.
Yep.
And they would just be talking about the case that they're working on, and somebody would get in the elevator to somebody really random, like a like an Olympic diver or a cowboy or something like that. The elevator would open and they would like walk out into like the scene where they belong or something like that. So it's just like weird stuff like that.
This film actually, the introductory scene actually shows Frank Drebin. He's actually taking a vacation in Beirut. and he kind of explains later on in the film, like I think it's like not too far away, in about 10, 15 minutes into it, where he says, "Oh, I went to Beirut to get away from it all," or something like that. Like, doesn't he shows up and he's talking to, I think, George Kennedy, and I think the first thing he asks him is, you know, where is that some woman or something like that that he's kind of into, and she goes, "Oh, no, she's ran away, you know, Frank," and he goes, "Oh, you know, I was doing it all for her," and it was, yeah, it's very funny.
Yeah, it is just a weird scene of all these terrorists who have gotten together to like get together some sort of plan to humiliate the US.
Yeah, I know, but
make them look bad.
Isn't it just like this random kind of meeting just to commit a terrorist act?
Yeah, it's like Castro and
I know, and Gorbachev is there.
Gorbachev, he like wipes the birthmark off the top of his head.
And Frank Drebin shows up and kind of, you know, causes all kinds of problems for them.
Just beats them up.
I know. So after he kind of disrupts the Conference of America's Greatest Enemies to humiliate the US, they actually cut back to LA, and Officer Nordberg, who we meet for the first time, which is none other than O.J. Simpson, who we discover later on is Frank Drebin's best friend.
I love this scene because he's like uncovered some sort of drug deal going on, and it's on a boat. And he decides he's going to go and bust in, like, this deal's going down, so I'm going to go bust in and arrest him. And he, like, tries to kick the door in, and his whole leg just goes through it. So they all have time. There's, like, 20 guys there, and they all have time to draw their guns on him while he's pulling his leg out the door.
Yep.
And, of course, they just shoot him dead.
But don't they shoot him, like, 20 times?
Yeah, just, like, 20 times. And then he gets, like, a foot in a bear trap, and then he, like, leans against wet paint and then falls into a cake.
And then he stumbles out the door of the boat and then falls overboard, doesn't he?
Oh my god!
I know. And then we kind of cut to George Kennedy and Drebin at the hospital talking to Nordberg and his very distraught wife, and that's exactly where I kind of got my my opening line from, because it's one of the funniest lines of the film when he says, "Oh, you know, I promise you, whatever scum did this, not one man on the force will rest for 1 minute until he's behind bars." This is now. Let's grab a bite to eat. So funny. And it's delivered in such a deadpan style. And Leslie Nielsen, like, I think we kind of spoke about this before in the Police Academy films, where we talked about Lieutenant Harris and how good the actor who played him did the role. And he got, like, you really dislike him, but you can tell behind the comedy there's a really quality actor that really knows his skill. And I think Leslie Nielsen is 100% going down that path. You can tell this guy is a trained, very skilled actor, and he kills it. He absolutely kills it. It's so funny, the comedy.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, Ed's there, and Mrs. Nordberg is just absolutely distraught.
Doesn't Drebin kind of say to her stuff like, "If I was you, I'd be filling out those donor organ forms not too far away."
Yeah, she's like, "Oh, who could do this to my poor Nordberg?" And he's like, "Oh, it could have been anybody, jealous lover, gay lover." And Nordberg's like trying to tell him like what happened by saying the name of the ship, which is "I love you." And he's just like, "Yeah, I love you too, Nordberg." And he's like, no, drugs. "No, let's get this man some drugs."
Nordberg, Me, Frank. Now, who did this to you?
I love you.
I love you too, Nordberg. Who were they?
Ship. Boat.
That's right, Nordberg. A boat. Now, when you're better, we'll go sailing together on a boat. We'll take a cruise just like last year.
Drugs.
Hey, nurse. Quick, give this man some drugs. Quick, can't you see he's in pain?
No.
Give him a shot, quickly.
No. Heroin. Heroin, Frank.
Nordberg, that's a pretty tall order. You're going to have to give me a couple of days on that one.
Oh, my poor Nordberg. Oh, he was such a good man, Frank. He never wanted to hurt anyone. Who would do such a thing?
Oh, it's hard to tell. Be a roving gang of thugs, a blackmailer, an angry husband, a gay lover. Frank, get a hold of yourself. Good cop. Needlessly cut down and ambushed by some cowardly hoodlums.
There's no way for a man to die.
Yeah, you're right, Ed. A parachute not opening, that's a way to die. Getting caught in the gears of a combine. Having your nuts bit off by a Laplander, that's the way I want to go.
Frank! Oh, this is terrible.
Don't you worry, Wilma. Your husband is going to be all right. Don't you worry about anything. Just think positive. Never let a doubt enter your mind.
He's right, Wilma. But I wouldn't wait until the last minute to fill out those organ donor cards.
What I'm trying to say is that, Wilma, as soon as Nordberg is better, he's welcome back at police squad.
Unless he's a drooling vegetable. But I think that's only common sense.
The fact that Ed's trying to comfort her as well, and he's just like saying things like, oh, you know, yeah, he can be back on the force unless he's a drooling vegetable, but that's just, you know, that's just common sense. It's the best.
Doesn't he kind of like lean in to like listen to Nordberg as well, and he kind of flicks the hospital bed up, and yeah. OJ Simpson kind of flips up, and he gets like, he throws back down, and there's some really good physical comedy in this, and OJ Simpson's like legitimately funny in this. He's quite good.
He doesn't do a lot in this movie. I mean, he is there just to have that opening scene and the scene in the bed. He gets a little capper at the end of the movie.
I think when I was a kid, man, I kind of vaguely remember OJ Simpson being in this film more than I remember. When I watched it the other day, I was surprised. Because you're dead right, man. He only shows up at the start of the film, and then he shows up at the end of the film for a quick scene. And you don't really hear from him at all for 80 minutes of the movie, do you?
I wonder if he's in the sequels more.
I think he is, and we'll get to those, won't we? But
yeah.
But OJ Simpson's kind of one of those weird guys. I mean, I'm looking at his filmography now, and truthfully, man, like, I know he did various movies, and he was a kind of a big star, like, he was obviously a big football player in his own right, but from my perspective, I only really know him from the Naked Gun films. Like, looking at his filmography, he did Capricorn 1, he did The Towering Inferno, he did a fair bit of TV here and there, but apart from that, He really didn't do a lot of like name movies, and these were big hits, and this was right before all that, you know, drama happened, you know, with the court stuff with him, and so I mean, these were a big deal for him, for sure.
And he does all right. You have to give it to him. He does a pretty funny job.
Yes, exactly. So where are we up to, man? So
they actually go to the police scientist's lab to try and get some like info on what had happened, and they meet like this science guy Ted, and he's kind of like, you know, he's like the spoof on James Bond's Q.
Yes.
Good work, Ted. What will you lab boys think up next?
Now that you mention it, here's something we developed only yesterday. To the casual observer, an ordinary shoe. But in actuality, it makes quite a handy weapon. And everything a cop in the field would need. We call it the Swiss Army shoe.
That's great, Ted. What about the fiber sample?
Let me just show you one more thing, Frank. Do you see these cufflinks I'm wearing? Well, they're not just cufflinks. Each one fires a single pin-sized dart that knocks out your victim for a few minutes, but does no permanent damage. Here, let me demonstrate on Ed.
Huh? Why?
Don't worry, he'll be up and around in no time. Why don't you take a pair, Frank?
Well, actually, I could use another pair of couplings.
Good, I think you'll like them.
You want this, Chief?
Yes, thank you, Al.
something on the side of your mouth, Al. No, no, the other side.
As you requested, Frank, we took some fiber samples from Nordberg's jacket. I'm afraid it doesn't look good.
What do you mean?
Take a look for yourself.
I can't see anything.
Use your open eye, Frank.
Oh, yeah, I can see it now.
At first glance, it would appear to be only the normal cotton fibers. But when we focused in closer, we discovered a fine white powder. We tested it. Pure heroin.
How well do you know Nordberg, Frank?
We're partners for 9 years, and he's my best friend.
I know, Frank, but we can't allow personal feelings to get in the way of duty.
Are you saying that Nordberg is...
I'm telling you that the Queen arrives here the day after tomorrow. If the press should pick this up with Nordberg still part of the force, it could be embarrassing to the police and the city. I'm sorry, Frank, I'm giving you 24 hours to clear Nordberg.
But, you know, he's got things like, you know, oh, we've developed this shoe, but it's got a knife in it, so it's a pretty handy weapon. But then he pulls out, like, the corkscrew and everything. It's the Swiss Army shoe.
It actually comes into play quite prominently later in the film, but he's invented a cufflink that shoots a tranquilizer dart. And Frank actually learns through Ted that Nordberg's jacket actually tested positive for heroin. I don't think Frank quite believes the heroin thing, does he?
I think it pretty much comes down to like, oh, we need to clear Nordberg's name. But from the test that we've done, it seems like Nordberg was actually involved with this heroin dealing rather than trying to stop it. So kind of like, that's his thing. He needs to find out what the hell is going on here.
It actually learns out that police squad is actually in charge of security for the very highly publicized visit of Queen Elizabeth II to Los Angeles. And Ed tells Frank that he has 24 hours to clear Nordberg before word gets out about what happened and detracts from the Queen's visit, because Ed is very concerned that the police squad is going to be embarrassed for this negative kind of publicity. So he makes a big point to Drebin that he's only got 24 hours to kind of get it dealt with, and that's kind of that.
Now, is this the point where they have the big press conference about how police squad is going to look after the Queen?
Yes, I believe.
Because I think he does this first, right?
Oh, God, I forgot about that conference. because isn't that bit, that gag with the toilet? Is that right? Is that what we're talking about?
They set up the whole lapel mic thing. His lapel mic's not working, so he has to switch it out. He gives like a really insulting speech about the Queen, about how stupid it is to have a Queen from an American point of view. And then, he goes off to the bathroom and forgets to turn his microphone
off. Oh, I think that was the point that my wife kind of zoned out a little bit of this film, because I was giggling away incessantly whilst I was watching this. I don't think she found it quite as funny as I did.
Yeah, but he finds out that the boat that was called I Love You was registered in the docks of a guy named Ludwig, and this is played by none other than Ricardo Montalban.
Who does a very good job, but again, and I know he did more than those films, but whenever I see him, I just think of Fantasy Island. It's the first thing that comes to mind whenever I look at Ricardo Montalban, and I know that obviously he was Khan in Star Trek, and I know that he did other films as well, so I shouldn't diminish his career. But from my point of view, man, those are the roles that I know him for, and I'm sure you're the same, yeah?
Yeah, definitely. Khan, Fantasy Island, and then probably Ludwig from Police Academy.
That's exactly right.
But yeah, he's the straight man here. I mean, he's the villain of the movie, but he's also the straight man.
Just quickly though, to put it into perspective, Montalban's been making, like, he's been involved in the media and TV industry since 1942. He was making movies in the 40s and 50s. It'd be very interesting to kind of see what some of those kind of films are like, just from an interest perspective, because he was kind of a big star back in the day, for sure. So I mean, it's kind of interesting, like how many movies he actually made.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, you know, so Frank actually meets with Ludwig in his office. Ludwig actually kind of reminds me, because Tom and I are talking about it with Lois and Clark, is John Shea's portrayal of Lex Luthor.
Oh yeah.
And it's actually kind of what it made me think of here. You know, he's just got this big lavish office, and he's talking about all the things that he's got, all the amazing stuff, the Japanese fighting fish.
Yeah, that's right.
He shows Frank this pen, which is given to him, which is indestructible to everything but water. So he's like trying to get information out of Frank while he's in the background trying to break this pen. As if to like prove him wrong. And it flicks over into the fish tank. So he has to go and get it because obviously it's broken now. It's gone in the water. But he also manages to stab the fighting fish while he's doing it.
Yeah.
It's a good little bit of slapstick.
And they spend a fair amount of time kind of setting that up. Like that whole sequence when they're in his office is not like a 30-second sequence. They're in there for a couple of minutes. And Frank is fighting with those fish for some time, desperately trying to get the pen out of the water. Does he get it out? I think he does, doesn't he? But he has some serious trouble. I know he destroys the fish in the process, and they make a big point of like it cost $20,000 for the Japanese fighting fish or something like that, he says, which is a huge amount of time. And you can tell that Ludwig is like this ostentatious kind of guy that kind of likes showing off all these toys and whatnot, and Frank is just a by the line kind of, you know, down and out cop just trying to do his job. And yeah, like that whole sequence is very good, and that sequence is where he kind of gets introduced to the Priscilla Presley character. Jane.
Yes. She's nice, like nice, Ludwig's secretary.
Yeah. Sorry, I got to say it, man. Nice beaver.
Thank you. I just had it stuffed.
Yeah.
Interesting choice, I think, for a movie, Priscilla Presley. I mean, I can't say I know her as an actress from anything else except the Naked Gun movies, but I think she's good in these.
I think she is too, and I think from a marketing perspective, it certainly gave these films like a touch more exposure than they probably would have got otherwise, because it would have been a reasonable coup to get Priscilla Presley, because I mean she's not a small star by any means, she's a giant, you know. I mean, she was married to Elvis, for God's sake. Like, you know, she had Elvis's only child, and I mean, just looking at her filmography now, I mean, she did Naked Gun, she was in The Adventures of Ford Fairlane, which I actually forgot about.
Good movie.
The sequel to Naked Gun and the third one as well. She did Melrose Place. She was in that in 96.
Oh, man.
She apparently was in Austin Powers, the International Man of Mystery, and she did a little bit of TV here and there. But you know, she hasn't made anything since 1999, which is quite a while ago. She doesn't produce... Oh, no, she's kind of involved with some production here and there, but she's not highly involved with the film and TV industry like she maybe once was back in the day.
Yeah, I'm sure she doesn't even need the money. She's living off Elvis's royalties forever.
Well, it says that she was actually in the original Dallas. She was in 144 episodes of that, playing a character named Jenna Wade. So but perhaps from my perspective, she didn't do that much. But maybe from the American's point of view, who was obsessed with Dallas in the 80s, she was you know, quite visible. So yeah, it's interesting.
For sure. Interesting. But yeah, you know, Ludwig kind of tries to put her on Frank. He's like, he insinuates that she needs to keep an eye on him. So, you know, just so he knows that nothing untoward is happening in his company, but you know. She doesn't really know anything about Ludwig's plans.
He almost kind of implies to Jane that it's almost like keep an eye on Frank by any means necessary kind of thing. Like, almost like implying that she should use her charms, you know what I mean?
Yeah, exactly. And that, of course, backfires because she actually does fall in love. Which is really funny.
I know. And it happens like really, really quickly. Like, doesn't Frank kind of come home? I know that's right. Like, at the end of that sequence, he kind of propositions her and says, we should go out to dinner or something like that, doesn't she? Or we should go out for a bite to eat. And for whatever reason, it doesn't get worked out. But cut to a scene or two later, and Frank comes home to his apartment, and there's Jane in one of Frank's kind of shirts, cooking dinner. And she goes, well, you did say we should have dinner. Well, here I am. You know, now's dinner kind of thing. And it all kind of happens from there, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's actually a pretty funny gag because it cuts into a montage of the two of them.
Oh, that's right.
And they're doing like all kinds of stuff. And you think it's like a big montage of like their months and months of relationship. But it cuts to the end of the montage and he's walking her home. And she goes, oh, Frank, I'm so happy. I can't believe we only just met yesterday.
What do they do in that montage? I can't remember. There's some wacky stuff in there.
Yeah,
they
go and get like tattoos.
That's it.
They run along the beach, knock over other couples, and yeah. There's like one where they're getting a hot dog It's the scene with the producer, and she kind of squirts mustard on him or something. So he just squirts her with sauce, and then they just squirt the hot dog vendor.
Yeah.
This is just random.
The attempt on Nordberg's life left me shaken and disturbed. And all the questions kept coming up over and over again, like bubbles in a case of club soda. Who is this character in the hospital? And why was he trying to kill Nordberg? And for whom? Did Ludwig lie to me? I didn't have any proof, but somehow I didn't entirely trust him either. Why was the I Love You not listed in Ludwig's records? And if it was, did he know about it? And if he didn't, who did? And where the hell was I? It was almost midnight when I got to my door. I just wanted a glass of Bosco and then slip under my blankets. But my night was just about to begin.
We should have dinner sometime. Tonight became sometime. I'm boiling a roast. How hot and wet do you like it?
Very hot and awfully wet.
And when Frank shows up to his apartment when Jane is there, he actually says this line. He goes, "Oh, let me. I just got to get into something more comfortable," implying he's going to get into his pajamas or whatever. Yeah, and he actually gets into a full suit,
like not the suit that he wears to work, like a proper dress suit.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
It is good, and they got to have sex as well.
Yeah,
she stands up and she just drops her dress. And then Frank stands up and he like pulls on his shirt and his whole suit just falls off.
Yeah. That's one of the gags that I remember when I was a kid. Maybe it was in the trailer or something like that, but I thought it was hilarious.
It's really good stuff. And, you know, we get a scene, of course, of Ludwig laying out his plan. He meets with this guy named Papschmier. And his whole thing is that he's going to have the queen assassinated.
Yeah.
And he's worked out this kind of like mind control device where all he has to do is push a button, which looks like, you know, like a car door opening button. And there's something hidden in a watch that sends people into a hypnotic trance and they're open to suggestion, in this case being kill people.
Yeah.
And he demonstrates this with his secretary,
who is told
that she's going to kill Papschmier, and Papschmier freaks out. But of course, the gun's not loaded or anything. It's just a demonstration.
It's funny how you mentioned the character Papschmier, which is hilarious. I mean, the joke is so funny. It's ridiculous. And talk about a joke that would just totally go over kids, like kids' heads. And it would hit adults big time, and they'd think it's hilarious. But it's played by this guy named Ray Burke, and he looked really familiar to me. I kept looking at him and going, man, like he's one of those guys. I mean, we all have them, those like you recognize these actors but you don't know what their names are. And I'm just looking him up now, and he was in Star Trek Insurrection, he was in X-Files, Babylon 5, Throw Mama from the Train, Doc Hollywood. He had a frequently occurring role as the principal on The Wonder Years with Kevin Arnold, and he was also on a pair of Home Improvement episodes as one of Tim's poker buddies. He appeared in the show Night Court, Golden Girls, Cheers, Frasier. Like, man, that guy's been around. Again, as I said, man, he's not one of those guys that you would know his name, but you certainly know the face.
Nice, yeah. You know, that's the whole thing, is that Ludwig's going to get $20 million for the assassination of Queen Elizabeth II. It's an interesting plot. And then, of course, Ludwig passes this technology on to Papschmier, who uses it to get Nordberg's doctor to kill him because, of course, you know, Nordberg surviving is not good for them.
No.
So the doctor is going to go ahead and kill Nordberg. And it goes into this crazy chase sequence with Frank trying to run him down. And he gets in the car of a student driver.
And you know what? The actress who plays that student driver is fantastic, I think, because she really plays it for laughs. Like, you can tell she's like this nervous kind of teen. And she does it so well, I think.
Yeah, her name's like Stacy or something like that. She's like, do it, Stacy. You can do it.
And the driving instructor is like this old guy that you can tell that has been, you know, a driving instructor for like 40 years kind of thing. And he plays it so well. Her name's Stephanie, isn't it?
Stephanie, that's it.
Yeah, it's played by this woman named Winifred Friedman, who, what was she in? She actually didn't really do too much after this. She was actually in the Happy Day spin-off, Joni Loves Chachi.
Random.
I know. And she also played on several seasons of Mr. Belvedere. Do you remember that show?
Yeah.
Yes.
Flashback.
I know. Whoa. Big time. Now, that's a show that I kind of remember from when I was quite young, and I don't think that's kind of left much of a cultural imprint, if you know what I mean.
But yeah, so, and that all comes to an end when the doctor like crashes car like four times and it just explodes and everything and it keeps going. He somehow ends up on top of a missile which crashes into a fireworks factory.
And then you got this gag of Frank like without like missing a moment, he just immediately goes into like police mode and kind of waving away any like bystanders saying nothing to see here, move on. Meanwhile in the background there's fireworks going off and the factory's on fire.
Because I've seen this movie umpteenth times. In that scene, while he's standing there telling everyone there's nothing to see here, nothing's going on, and it cuts to the shot of the fireworks factory going off, the doctor actually runs away behind him.
Yeah.
So the doctor's not even dead. He just gets away. I didn't even see it until watching it this time. I was like, that's the doctor. Oh, my God.
Isn't that like and when you actually think about it too, the doctor is an innocent bystander. Like, isn't he just a doctor kind of doing his job and then he kind of gets coerced by Vincent Ludwig? And then he ends up getting killed. I forgot to tell as well that, and this is kind of revealed earlier on in the film, and there's a good gag where Frank Drebin's actually singled out as being a bit of a troublemaker by the mayor, who's actually told Frank to stay away from the Queen's visit. Like, you're not allowed anywhere near it after the incident that kind of happened. Like, it turns out that, like, previously, didn't Frank, like, kill, like, six people or something like that?
Yeah, it was a Shakespeare in the Park.
That's it.
Julius Caesar. And he thought it was a bunch of weirdos stabbing people, so he shot them.
That's what he says. I can't even remember exactly what he says, but just the whole Shakespeare in the Park thing, just shooting them on sight. It's so funny. Yeah, so as I said, like, the mayor has kind of singled out Frank as being like a big troublemaker and to totally stay away from the Queen's visit, because anything involved with Frank being there is only going to lead to trouble.
Yeah, and it pretty much comes as well because he refuses to believe that Ludwig has nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
As opposed to everybody else who says, like, no, he's a respected member of the community, a very generous man and everything. He's like, nope, there's something not right about this guy.
Yep.
So he breaks into his office, finds some proof, but then manages to set the whole office on fire. And they do this thing too, because he's in the office and it's dark. Ludwig's not there, of course. And he sees all these buttons that sort of like have automated the office, and one of them says piano, so when you press it the piano starts playing itself. So when he sets the place on fire and then he falls into it and the piano comes up and it's playing that like slapstick kind of music while he's running around and the whole place is going up in flames, and he ends up out on the window ledge. And this is a very high building, like 20 stories high, and there's these naked statues, like naked women, naked men. And he has a run-in with a woman in the window because he grabs her right on the tits and she freaks out. He falls off the ledge and he grabs onto a giant dick.
Yeah, that's right. And then as he's kind of helping himself back up, he turns the dick around. So it goes from being this, excuse my crass term, but from being this flaccid penis to like an erect penis. And they do a gag where there's a smile on the statue all of a sudden.
Yeah, and it's when he's talking to the mayor and she's like listing off all the things that he had done. She goes, oh, it's like arson, conducting a search without a warrant, sexual assault with a concrete dildo.
And they do this gag too because he kind of falls into the window and he lunges at this poor woman with this dildo. And it's like he's like this deranged lunatic.
Oh, God.
But meanwhile, even though he kind of entered Ludwig's office searching for evidence, he actually found evidence. He found a note from Papschmidt addressed to Ludwig, which actually confirmed his suspicions. So after that, he set off the fire and did all that. But Frank actually later has a run-in with one of Ludwig's henchmen at his factory in a stockyard. And after that, actually confronts Ludwig with his allegations at a reception for the Queen's arrival. And this is actually quite funny because they give all these kind of gifts to the Queen, and for whatever reason, Ludwig's gift to the Queen is like this musket, this old like 18th century musket from like the Civil War or something like that. And Frank misinterprets Ludwig's presentation of a musket to the Queen as an attack, and he tries to protect her, but only causes more of a problem, and he's fired from police squad, because what he actually does is that he tackle the Queen, and they fly down the table, and he ends up with like the Queen's legs like wrapped around Frank, and before you know it, like all the cameras are kind of going off, and it's like, doesn't it cut to like the front page of next morning's paper, and it's like, yeah, it's clearly a picture of Frank at the Queen in this embrace, and it's very funny.
Yeah, I like Ed's line there as well when he's like, you on top of the Queen with her legs wrapped around you, and they call that front page news. Like, yes. What's the deal with this? And then Frank says, oh, you know, what can I do? The only thing I can think of is the next time I shoot somebody, I could be arrested.
<That's right. laughs> So right after Frank gets fired from police squad, he actually finds Jane. And Jane actually tells Frank about the plot at the Californian Angels baseball games, which is meant to happen during the 7th inning stretch. And that one of the players in the baseball team is actually going to assassinate the Queen. So it's at this stage that regardless of his status on police squad, it's clearly Frank's duty to protect the Queen and to stop this plan kind of going down.
In order to sort of get in there, first he goes and knocks out the person who is going to sing the national anthem,
yeah,
who is an Italian opera singer named Enrico Palazzo.
And there's a good gag later on in the film too, because you're right, he knocks out Enrico Palazzo and he goes out to sing the national anthem and he does this terrible job.
He doesn't even know the words.
Yeah, and there's this gag where for whatever reason later on in the movie he ends up in the big screen and he's not meant to be Enrico Palazzo anymore, but the crowd thinks he is, and they look at him and go, hey, it's Enrico Palazzo.
He saved the Queen. Enrico Palazzo.
Yeah, it's very funny. But he's not the only person he knocks out, is it?
Of course, they recognize who he is when he's up singing the anthem. So he has to change again. Knocks out the umpire, takes on him, his personality. And so he goes out as the umpire. And while the game's going on, he's trying to pat down every player to figure out who it is who's going to go and kill the Queen.
Yeah, I know. And he's being really overt. But you can tell also, too, that Frank is possibly enjoying himself a little bit out on the baseball field as well. Like, I suspect Frank Drebin's a bit of a baseball fan, and he knows all the moves, and he's got it all down pat, doesn't he?
Yeah, I think it's the thing, too. Like, I guess he's from L.A., so it kind of seems like every time that LA does something like really good, like he lets them win.
Yes.
Like he's happy to give like out. Yeah, that's a strike. That's a strike.
Yeah. And in order to kind of delay the 7th inning stretch, he's doing anything possible by like making really, really bad calls and stuff, like terrible calls. Like it's clearly a strike and he's calling it a ball. And, you know, when somebody's not out, it's clearly kind of out and or not out, I should say, or whatever it might be. And he causes like a fight amongst like the officials, doesn't he?
Yeah, it's pretty funny stuff. There is like a slow burn of a gag as well, where Ludwig gets a hot dog and it's got the finger of the guy who he had sent to take out Drebin, because he that ended with the guy like falling in a vat.
I forgot about that, actually. You're right.
Ludwig gets the hot dog with this human finger and a ring and all that in it.
Yeah.
Just a random little gag. But yeah, he causes this big fight, but it's too late because Ludwig has set off Reggie Jackson to go and kill the Queen.
Keep in mind, too, for people that may not know who Reggie Jackson is, he's like truly a superstar of his sport. He's one of the giants of American baseball. Like, he was inducted into the National Baseball Hall of Fame in 1993, and he played for kind of, you know, he was a 14 All-Stars, 5 World Series victories, Yankees, Oakland Athletics. I don't have all these stats in front of me. Baltimore Orioles, Kansas City he played for, and as I said, he was an absolute giant. So it's probably not that small a feat getting like a baseball player of his caliber to kind of play this role. And I mean, you know, he doesn't really have a whole lot to do. Let's be truthful. But he plays it well, and you know, it's kind of nice to have a little bit of, you know, authenticity amongst like the baseball community. And as I said, like Reggie Jackson was a big star, so like it kind of adds a little bit of weight to the scenario, if you know what I mean.
As much weight as Weird Al Yankovic, though.
You know what? That actually almost felt like very early product placement, because I mean, I'm not too sure what, like, if he had an album coming out or one of his kind of gag kind of eat it or one of those kind of things was happening at the time. But it happens really early in the film, where I think Frank is actually coming off the plane from Beirut, and there's a big crowd down there, and Frank thinks it's for him, and there's like a pedestal there, and there's like a woman with flowers and stuff like that walking up, and doesn't he like take the flowers from the woman, who kind of looks at him and kind of like, what are you doing, you know? And it turns out it's all for Weird Al, isn't it?
I have a feeling that might be the gag, that like all these people have shown up to the airport to see Weird Al.
Yeah, like, I don't. Like,
he's been away on tour or something, and he's like, oh, he's back. Yeah, Weird Al is here.
I know.
But yeah.
So Ludwig, the seventh inning stretch hits, Ludwig activates his sleeper Reggie Jackson, and then Jane actually alerts Frank, who chases after Jackson and tackles him. But Jackson actually manages to get away when Frank's action starts a general riot between the two teams. Now, Ludwig actually holds Jane at gunpoint as he begins to leave the stadium, whilst Jackson actually takes aim at the Queen. And correct me if I'm wrong, isn't Maltaban only doing this for $20 million?
Yeah.
Is that right? This whole gig, or this whole scenario, reminds me of the whole Austin Powers with Dr. Evil, like $10 million, you know what I mean? And all that whole gag there, because it's, I mean, don't get me wrong, it's, I mean, $20 million is a lot of money, but it's like, it's not the Queen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and the fact that he's already rich as well, you know, it's the same thing in Austin Powers, like when he says, like, yeah, we make billions of dollars as a legitimate business in legitimate industry. We don't need to have an evil empire to make money. Yeah. It makes no sense.
It makes no sense at all.
But yeah, there's a couple of good gags here as well with, you know, he brings out the cufflinks. Of course, you know, Chekhov's cufflinks, shoots it, but it doesn't hit Reggie Jackson. It actually hits this fat woman who falls off the ledge on top of Reggie Jackson.
Yeah, that's right.
And then Ludwig's trying to get away with Jane, and they just swap out Priscilla Presley with like a mannequin or something, or blow up doll or something. So he's like flailing her around back and forth.
Oh my God.
It's really funny.
So yeah, so Frank follows Ludwig to the top of the stadium and shoots Ludwig with the other cufflink dart, causing him to fall over the side of the stadium, where he's actually struck by a passing bus, who's then run over by a steamroller. And from what I understand, this is not the only film in 1988 to use the concept of being ran over by a steamroller.
Really?
I think A Fish Called Wanda did it in the same year, and there was another film as well. I did have the trivia in front of me. I might have to look it up. But yeah, obviously that was a bit of a gag at the time.
And it's a good gag.
Because it is a good gag.
Well, after the steamroller, he also gets trampled on by a marching band.
That's exactly right.
And the marching band steps down on the little garage door opener. And this sets off Jane to kill Drevin. And he has to implore her by proposing marriage.
Oh, that's right. And that's when the whole Enrico Palazzo thing comes back, because Frank is pouring his heart out to Jane and it's being broadcast through the stadium, and he's sort of like, he's trying to like get her out of like this trance. They all look at the screen and go, hey, it's Enrico Palazzo. Oh, my God. Anyway, so Frank actually breaks Jane's hypnotized state by openly professing his feelings for her and giving her an engagement ring. Frank and Jane meet Mayor Barkley, who actually then reinstates Frank back to police squad, and a recovered Nordberg congratulates him until Frank inadvertently pushes Nordberg's wheelchair down the stadium stairs.
It goes all the way down, hits the railing, and he flips over.
Keep in mind, this is Frank's best friend. We'll go on that boat trip next year.
Oh, God.
And I think that's the end of the film, isn't it?
That's the end of the film. All right, so ratings recommend?
Oh, man, I'm going to give this a good recommend. I laughed a lot, and as you can tell by the tone of our discussion, I think it's pretty clear that we both enjoyed it. I mean, don't misunderstand me. I think there's maybe a couple of gags maybe towards the end of the film that kind of pass you by a little bit, and it's not because they're not funny, but the volume of gags is really quite heavy. Like, there's a lot of laughing in this film, and it might not be to everyone's tastes, truthfully, but for me, it worked. I'm going to give this a recommend. Definitely. I'm probably going to give it about a 7.5 to 8 Nordbergs. I think I'm kind of at that level. It's not a perfect film, but it's very funny. And Leslie Nielsen is just fantastic.
Well, I'm right there with you. Super strong recommend for this. As a comedy, it is just gold. And you're right. It's very dense with gags. You know, a lot of visual stuff, a lot of stuff just going on in the background that you might miss. So it, you know, rewards repeat viewings. You know, you might see things that you may not have seen the first time around. So it's good in that respect. So I'm going to give this 8 nice beavers. Nice. Because it really is. I laugh all the time. You know, even just those little subtle side gags crack me up. Like when they're in the lab, in the police crime lab. And Ed and Ted walk through the door, but Frank, like, walks around the set. It's great stuff.
Blink and you'll miss it. If you know, yeah. you can't pause too much, because there's a lot of stuff in it. And I think it's kind of nice, because it does rewards repeat viewing, because the gags you may miss the first time suddenly appear, and it's very funny. We loved it.
All right, so we have a tiny little bit of feedback here for our Naked Gun research. I'm calling this our From the Files of the Rewatch podcast section.
Yeah, nice.
And this was just a comment from Chris Collins over on Facebook. I posted about how the Police Squad episodes were just up on Daily Motion. You can just watch them for free. And he was talking about how much he liked the show. But he threw in this little bit of like trivia for Police Squad. He wrote, according to Leslie Nielsen's interview on the Police Squad DVD, Police Squad wasn't successful at all, but the Naked Gun films were, because people don't quote-unquote watch TV. According to Nielsen, this kind of humor requires you to give it your full attention. I think you and I both agree with that.
Yeah, definitely.
And generally, people don't do that with TV, but generally speaking, they do that with movies, especially when you're at the movies.
Yeah, especially these days, I mean, with so many distractions at home. I mean, I'm sure you do it, man, as well as I, but when I'm watching TV at home, I am paying attention, but generally I've kind of got my eye on an iPad, or there's my phone lying around, or whatever it might be, so there might be something else happening in the room for whatever reason. And generally speaking, your attention can kind of get diverted, for use of a better term. But when you're at the movies, it's something different, man. Your sole focus is to watch whatever you're watching, and you try to kind of avoid any kind of disturbances and you can just focus. It's great.
Yeah. So, and I'm glad that Chris brought this up because it gives me another chance to just say, go and watch it. It's 6 episodes. They're only 25-minute episodes. Like I said, it's not as polished as the Naked Gun movies, but it's the same kind of comedy. And yeah, you know, it's just got gag a minute. Stuff going on in the background, just like the movies. Very well worth it. You can binge it. 6 episodes.
It kind of just dawned on me too, man. I've never thought about it until now, but this is almost prime for reboot material, isn't it? Like,
oh, for sure.
It wouldn't surprise me if they got whoever, I don't know, some random to kind of reboot this and totally do it again like this, for sure. I mean, David Zucker's still alive. They could totally, and he's still making movies. He could do this if they asked him to.
Yeah, I think we've talked about that throughout the series and our bonus episodes. I mean, we were saying Netflix could totally pick up Police Academy and do that. They could even get back a lot of the original cast. A lot of them are still alive. So Police Academy, totally ripe for a sequel or a reboot. Weekend at Bernie's. I think we both agreed that maybe a series on Netflix would be great for Weekend at Bernie's. I would totally watch that. Naked Gun. I mean, come on, I know Leslie Nielsen isn't with us anymore, but yeah, I mean, this type of comedy, if you can get the right comedian actor in the part, it would be so good.
Yeah, it would be good, definitely. So, I mean, you never know, Netflix, if you're listening, keep it in mind.
That would be so awesome.
Yeah, I know.
All right, the next episode, we will be discussing Naked Gun 2.5, The Smell of Fear. Can't wait for that.
All right, so that's it for this episode of the Rewatch Podcast. Keep up with listener interaction by joining our Facebook page at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod and visit our webpage rewatchpodcast.podomatic.com.
And remember, you can always write us an email or record a voice message and send it over to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. And also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. It's always very helpful. And you can help support the Rewatch Podcast by heading over to patreon.com/rewatchpodcast, where you can make a monthly contribution as little as $1. And also, our entire back catalog is up on YouTube. All the sliders, all of our movie discussions, right there on YouTube.
Mm.
Just search Rewatch Podcast and subscribe. We actually need 100 subscribers to get a specific URL for YouTube. So the more people who track us down, subscribe, that would be so awesome.
Yeah, with some very pretty visuals to go with it too.
All right. Thanks for joining me, Nathan. It's been so great talking about this. I mean, I think you and I laughed probably just as much as we laughed while watching the movie.
Oh, if not more, truthfully.
Awesome stuff. I cannot wait for the sequel. Let's hope it holds up.
And you know what? Even if it doesn't, we'll work that out when we get there. I'm sure there'll be more than enough laughs.
Absolutely. Mm. All right. Well, I'll just say until next time, I finally found someone I can love. A good, clean love without utensils.
And it's true what they say. Cops and women don't mix. It's like eating a spoonful of Drano. Sure, it'll clean you out, but it'll leave you hollow inside.
The Rewatch Podcast is not associated with the copyright holders of these films, and no copyright infringement is intended. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes as provided in Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2016, The Rewatch Podcast.
Hi, Rewatch Podcast listeners, I'm Corey.
I'm Tom.
And I'm Nathan.
First off, let me say that we have all had a blast doing the Rewatch Podcast. Every week, we put out another episode for free for you. And although we enjoy these discussions with each other, we truly do this for you guys out there in podcast land.
That's right, Corey. But we are here today to tell you about Patreon. Every week, there are costs involved in podcasting about film and television, including hosting and bandwidth charges, our own personal internet usage, and film or show rentals and purchases. So, we're asking you to become a Patreon supporter.
If you can afford as little as $1 to throw our way per month, it would really help us keep the lights on. And if you want to send $100 our way every month, we wouldn't turn that down either. But it's your choice, and we appreciate the support you bring.
As always, we strive to bring you the best quality shows we can create, and we hope that you enjoy them. So head on over to patreon.com/rewatchpodcast to become one of our patrons and show your support for the Rewatch Podcast.
And if we get enough patrons, we may even be able to produce exclusive content just for the supporters in the form of simply getting episodes before the main feed release, or even bonus film discussion episodes as a thank you for your support. The website again is patreon.com/rewatchpodcast.
Thanks, everyone.